Winston was ready, too. He clumped in his suit's heavy boots to the airlock hatch. Trudy followed a step behind him. The big heavy hatch swung open, and they stepped over its combing into the airlock itself, a metal-walled chamber scarcely big enough for the two of them in their cumbersome suits. To Trudy, it felt comfortably snug, safe, like a protective womb. "Closing the inner hatch," Winston said. Trudy heard his voice in her helmet speakers. Once the hatch shut, the older woman's voice said, "Pumping down!" A pump started chugging away, but the sound quickly faded as the air was sucked out of the chamber. Trudy felt the vibration of the pump through the soles of her boots. "We're in vacuum now," she knew, her breath quickening. "They're pumping all the air out." The vibration stopped, and the display pad beside the outer hatch turned from amber to red. "Ready for excursion," Winston said. Trudy nodded inside her helmet as she sucked in a deep breath. The air felt cold, dry. "You're clear for excursion," said the woman's voice. "Opening outer hatch," Winston said as he reached a gloved hand to the display pad. "Copy opening outer hatch." The hatch swung slowly, noiselessly open. Trudy saw an expanse of open, uneven, bare ground. Not a bush or a blade of grass. "Nothing can live out there," she told herself. "Not unless you're in a suit." Winston stepped out onto the dusty ground and extended his arm, inviting Trudy to follow him. Sealed inside the helmet, it was hard for Trudy to see her own booted feet. She tried to bend at the waist, but the suit's joints were stiff, even with the servo motors assisting them. Carefully, she stepped over the hatch's combing and out onto the lunar regolith. "You're doing fine," Winston encouraged. "I'm walking on the moon." Trudy felt excited and scared all at the same time, like the first time she had done a parachute jump back in California. She kept her eyes on the ground. It was uneven, pockmarked with little craterlets, and strewn with rocks from the size of pebbles to boulders as big as an automobile. Looking up warily, she saw that the horizon seemed strangely close, a hard slash across the ground where the world ended and the infinity of space began. No haze in the distance, she realized. No air. "This isn't so bad," she told herself. Then she saw a structure a couple of dozen meters away. It looked like a shed made of thin honeycomb metal. "What's that?" she asked. "The garage. We parked the tractors in there. They're both out now, towing the mirror across the mountains." Looking up cautiously, Trudy asked, "But where are the mountains? I thought we were surrounded by Ringwall Mountains." Winston's radio voice answered, "They're over the horizon in the direction you're facing. You can't see them from here, unless you turn around." She did, a slow, full 180 turn, and saw the Ringwall Mountains rising over the airlock hatch. They looked tired, worn, their slopes gentle. Bunny slopes, she thought, if they had any snow on them. There seemed to be a road of sorts carved into the bare rock, switchbacking from the summit to the floor on which they stood. "Those mountains have been eroded by several billion years of micrometeorite infall," Winston was saying, "sandpapered by those little dust motes flying in from space." "Yeah," Trudy replied. "No water to erode them. No rain or wind. But if a bullet-sized micrometeorite happened to hit me..." She tried to shake off her worries, and at last worked up the courage to look up at the stars. There were thousands of them. Millions. Billions. Even through the heavy tinting of her helmet, Trudy could see them spangling the blackness of space, stretching out to infinity, staring down at her with ominous, unblinking solemnity. So many stars. Trudy couldn't make out any of the constellations she was so familiar with back on Earth. The profusion of stars blotted them out. Then it hit her. The sky was empty. No Earth appeared up there, bright and friendly, the way it hung in the sky over Selene. Suddenly she was 7 years old again, all alone, very frightened, all alone in the universe, staring at the cold, empty sky, feeling as if she were falling upward into that unfeeling, remorseless, infinite wilderness. She squeezed her eyes shut and tried to fight down the panic that was surging through her. Recovery. You okay? Winston's voice made Trudy's eyes snap open. He sounded concerned, worried.
Me?
She squeaked.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm fine.
You sounded like you were puffing, gasping.
I'm okay, she insisted,
concentrating on looking at him, not the sky. She couldn't see his face through the tinting of his helmet, but she heard him say, "Some people get a jolt when they first come out here. Guys from Selene, they're used to seeing Earth overhead. It bothers them here."
"That's what the far side is all about, isn't it?"
Trudy replied, desperately trying to keep her voice from shaking.
"I mean, this side of the moon is always pointed away from Earth. You never see Earth from here."
"Right," said Winston.
"Is that a road?"
she asked, pointing with one gloved hand.
"Yeah, Simpson's Highway, we call it. That's where they took the mirror off to Mendeleev.
And now they're bringing it back." Winston didn't reply, but Trudy got the sense that he was nodding his head.
"Not much to see, is there?" she said,
keeping her eyes on her companion. "Not the stars, not the stars.
Most of the base is underground. Those are the solar farms out there," he pointed. "That's how we generate our electricity."
Trudy followed his pointing arm and saw an area of dark solar cells spread across the floor of the plane, silently drinking in sunlight.
"Daylight for 14 days straight, just about," said Winston.
"And 14 straight days of night," Trudy added.
"Yeah. We generate twice the power the base needs and store the excess in superconducting coils for the night. We've also got a nuclear generator buried out there as a backup."
"Just like Selene."
"Uh-huh."
Winston hesitated a moment, then said,
"Well, that's about it. You want to go in now?"
"I passed the test," Trudy exulted. "I got through the initiation."
As nonchalantly as she could manage, she replied, "I guess."
As they turned toward the airlock hatch set into the slope of the Ringwall Mountain, Trudy's eye caught a glint of something halfway up the distant twisting road.
"What's that?"
Winston said, "Oh, that's Simpson's gang toting the mirror back." An enormous rig was laboriously inching along the winding road, bearing a huge flat load that gleamed in the sunlight. Trudy stared at it, fascinated. It was like a huge round metal pancake, obviously on wheels of some sort, creeping down the road painfully slowly.
"Mirror must have cracked at one of the switchback turns," Winston was saying. "It'll take them 7-8 hours to get it back down here."
"Do you have a pair of binoculars on you?" Trudy asked.
"Nah. Come on, let's go back inside."
A smaller vehicle was speeding down the switchbacks at breakneck speed, kicking up a trail of dust that hung lazily in the vacuum. Lighter gravity, Trudy told herself. Dust doesn't settle as fast as on Earth.
"We'd better get inside," Winston urged.
Whoever's driving that buggy is in an awful hurry, Trudy thought. He could get himself killed zipping around those curves like that.
"Time to go, Dr. Yost."
Hesitantly, Trudy turned and followed Winston back to the airlock hatch.
"How on earth do they get the mirror back inside the base?" she asked.
As he pressed the control pad set beside the hatch, Winston replied,
"Biggest airlock in the solar system. It forms one entire wall of the mirror lab over on the far side of the big turntable. Hard to see from this angle, but it's right over there, set into the mountainside."
Trudy nodded inside her helmet. "Must be something to see," she thought. "An airlock that can take 100-meter mirror." As the hatch slid silently open, Winston went on.
"Professor Ulrich thought about building the mirror lab out here in the open. Vacuum is a lot cleaner than an underground facility filled with air and sweat and all sorts of impurities and contaminants."
"But," Trudy prompted,
"he decided it'd be easier for the staff to work in air instead of outside in suits, so they built the big airlock."
Trudy realized that Winston hadn't pointed out the airlock to her when he'd taken her through the mirror lab. He hadn't even mentioned it. Once back inside, it took nearly an hour to vacuum the dust off their suits and then wriggle out of them. The air in the locker room had an acrid smell to it. Before she could ask, Winston smilingly explained,
Place smells like gunpowder, doesn't it? That's from the dust. As she peeled off her thermal undergarment,